Well, today on the Next Phase with Steve Key podcast, someone I greatly admire in the business, and that's Warren Weeks. If you know media relations and media training across this country, you likely have heard of him if you haven't already used him. Over the past two decades, he's become one of Canada's most popular and trusted media trainers. He's worked with thousands of spokespeople across all sorts of different industries, really helping them gain control of their media interviews. And that's such a fine line that we walked. He formed his own company back in 2003. And I have to admit, he's a bit of a multi-platform star, great presence on all the online platforms and Twitter and YouTube page, and even a very successful podcast. But unlike me, Warren is really supersized in all of this stuff. So good morning and welcome to the podcast, Warren.
Good morning, Steve. Making me feel old with that multi-decade bio, but thanks very much for having me here.
I feel really old when my number one son is turning 30. And
I saw that. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's just time does fly, and in our careers and everything we do, it flies. But today I wanted to talk about sort of dealing with the media and being a good spokesperson. Do you have a secret for someone to be a good informed spokesperson?
Do you have 8 hours or so?
Well, it's a course. Here we go. It's a course in 10 minutes.
Well, as you know, right? There are so many levels and layers to this. When you see a great interview on TV or you read some great quotes, it looks so easy. We've all seen, you know, the Barack Obamas and the Steve Jobses that everyone likes to talk about. To me, it really comes down to prep and practice and self-awareness, having a process, figuring out, the trick to me is kind of figuring out what you want to say ahead of time and then delivering it in a way that sounds conversational. So, I made a decision a couple of years ago. I don't even work with politicians anymore because they tend to break that rule. It sounds like they just got out of a media training session. They're kind of shoving the same messages at people and not really answering the questions. Not all of them, but enough of them that I don't really enjoy that piece. And so I tell people, you need to understand that it's not a conversation per se. It looks like one. It feels like one. You have to kind of scope out what it is you want to say ahead of time in an interesting way that serves the audience, and then practice it to make it sound natural and make it sound spontaneous. And don't get yourself canceled. All those things have to be going at the same time. And so it's self-awareness, prep, and practice.
We've talked offline several times just about the practice in general of training and media, good examples, bad examples, and there's plenty out there. I don't have to cite specifics in this, but I found with executives, training needs to be something that's ongoing. I mean, heck, many of these people will spend hundreds and if not thousands of dollars on their golf lessons annually, but they think they take a media training course once, and that's going to do them for life. And I think you have to agree with me that this needs to be ongoing.
This also is a pretty deep topic. And my thoughts around this have changed as I've gotten older over the years. Back in the day, I wanted to convince everyone. I wanted to convince every executive and every executive director and every board member, you need this. This is something you have to do every couple of years. And over the last few years, maybe I'm a little bit more jaded, maybe I'm a little bit more realistic, but my new viewpoint is I'm not going to waste any effort trying to convert anyone. I'm going to work with the people who appreciate it and the people who kind of get that this is something they need to work on. It's much more fulfilling, and you end up not having to deal with all those other individuals. And those, frankly, that other pool, the people who think they know how to do it, the people who are, I don't know, self-important or a little bit arrogant or a little bit ignorant, or they have this as a blind spot. Those are the interviews that tend to not go very well. Those are the ones that end up in my highlight reel in every media trainer's presentation, or those are the ones that are just kind of like blah interviews. They're hitting singles and doubles when they could be hitting triples and home runs. So The people, it's interesting, the people who usually excel at this when we do our sessions are the ones who want refreshers every couple of years. So it's this inverse thing where the people who need it the most, I think they don't. And the people who are actually pretty good at it want more of it. So that's a little bit on my thoughts on that. But there's a certain percentage of executives who just, you know, for whatever reason, think they don't need it. They're too busy. I already know how to do this. And for example, people think if they give a great presentation, you know, you have many people who are really great speakers and spontaneous. They can get up in front of a crowd and give a great talk and really motivate everybody. And they think that automatically translates to media relations. There's overlap for sure, but it's not the same thing. So there's all these different little nuances. And I'm obviously, like you, I'm a nerd in this area. I could talk about all those nuances all day long. And the last thing I'll say on this is that media training, like one media training session over here is not the same as a media training session over here. There's differences in quality. So, you know, if someone comes in and maybe they're a mediocre media trainer, or maybe it's like the third session they've ever done, or maybe they're using someone else's PowerPoint deck from 1998 and they think this is media training. And the executive thinks, okay, well, this is what it is. This is the only one I've seen. I guess this is media training, and they get a not very good product. Now, there's some fantastic trainers out there, some really great companies, but there's no barrier to entry. Anybody can pick up a camera, start up a website and say you're a media trainer. So you have to kind of do your homework and figure out what you're going to be getting. So there's all, you know, I could talk about any of these topics for so long. So I'll just shut myself up now, but those are kind of my top level thoughts on that.
Yeah. I found that, you know, certain people really want to take the time to do it. My most recent position at Insurance Bureau of Canada, we had many subject matter experts to speak to the media. And I found them so receptive to my thoughts, because my philosophy in this was, if we're going to make a mistake, let's make it here in this room. Let's not make it out there. And our CEO, Don Forgeron, he was a stickler for details. So we would go through a Q&A and worst case scenario. And so by the time he would do an interview, he was ready. Mm-hmm. And he was very conversational and very good. But, you know, I've been at other organizations where it was much more difficult. They almost wanted you to go to the reporter and get the questions. And as you know, that's sort of a journalistic no. And it just won't happen. So, you know, again, best prepare, best make your mistakes with people like you and me.
Yeah, for sure. I tell people that your first interview is going to be your worst one. So why do you want to do your first one with CTV or the Toronto Star? Let's do it in the boardroom. And if you're going to do it on your own, you know, I have a client that I've worked with many years ago. She is the head of a lab testing association. And obviously they've been extremely busy through the pandemic. And as of like March, I think she had done over 100 TV interviews from her home. And I asked her about that process. And she said that still for every interview, she writes her messages, she turns on her computer, she records herself, she videotapes herself reading her answers, and then she watches it and assesses it and makes some changes based on that. So even someone who has 100 interviews under her belt and who I would say is a, you know, five-star professional at this prepares every time. And so with the people who are really consistently successful, that's the kind of effort that they put into it. The people who just pick up the phone, kick their feet up on the desk and just, they're staring out the window and making stuff up as they go, those are the ones that don't go very well.
Yeah, we've been through 18 months of the pandemic. I know you lost a lot of face-to-face business.
Oh yeah.
But you pivoted. And I wanted to put a bit of a plug in here for your what I call a great self-directed online course. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, why you did that and what you try to achieve with that?
So this has been, this is a definition of teaching an old dog new tricks. So as you know, the business that we're in, I'm like basically a one person business. I do have some consultants and things that I work with to do some of our simulated interviews, but basically it's just me. And so if you get sick one day, there's no revenue that day. And I've literally had weeks where, and I'm very fortunate to be able to do this, but you know, I'm in Ottawa on Tuesday, Edmonton on Wednesday, Ottawa on Thursday, Toronto on Friday. And by the time you kind of like, you've seen these concerts where they're like, hello, Cleveland. And they're in like some other city, like you forget where you are and like jet lag and all this. And so brains by the pound, by the hour, that's the business that we have typically been in corporate communications, media relations. So the pandemic happens, and within, I'd say, 3 or 4 days, I lost about a third of a year's worth of business. Just every email coming in was cancel session, and just as soon as you hear bing, it was like Pavlov's bell. You knew it was happening. And so, on one hand, it's concerning, obviously, and you don't know how long this is going to last. And on the other hand, though, I thought this is the first break I've had in 18 years. Like I started my business 18 years ago. This is the first time I've had a break to breathe. And so I started looking around and seeing what other people were doing. And so I stumbled upon this guy in the United States called Jack Butcher. I don't know if anyone's familiar with him out in your audience, but he has this brand called Visualize Value. He takes business concepts and he illustrates them in these very simple black and white images, but he's a brilliant guy. And so he had created an online course called Build Once, Sell Twice. And I looked through the sort of landing page and like it seemed like a pretty interesting thing. I think it was about $300 US. And so I took the plunge, binged it in a day, and it really changed the way that I thought. Like I thought that I had a service that you can't digitize. You have to be there in the room. You have to be like staring in the face. And what I learned watching that course is that there you could do this. So I spent about 3.5 months building this platform, building this course, building this content, a ton of work. And it's at the point now where I really think if I got hit by a truck this afternoon, I'm very happy with this course standing in for the best version of what I do. I think that's kind of out there. And then, of course, the old field of dreams, build it and they will come. Well, that's not necessarily the case because nobody knows about it. And so the next piece was e-commerce and having to teach myself, like, how the hell do you run a Shopify store and all the back end automation stuff. Right. Anyway, that's all up and running. I put out a public tweet to kind of push myself. I said I was going to launch it on January 31st. And so there's a lot of late nights trying to meet that deadline, but I ended up getting it out. And the thing is created, it's out in the world. And the response so far has been mind blowing, I have to say.
Yeah, it's kind of like, some people write books and this is like a living, breathing book because the good thing is that you can change it. You can adapt it. Yeah. You can add things because in the last year, the way that interviews take place have changed. And here we're doing one on Zoom. Now, sure, I use just the audio portion of it, but for executives, it now will mean that they're never really away. There's no excuse. You can get to your computer at some point and do your interview. And I believe the tactics of an interview on Zoom, they're very different than doing them in person.
Oh yeah, for sure. Even energy level, how do you frame your camera? Like for the first few months, it was acceptable to have a weird backdrop or your bed is behind you or, you have a blurry thing behind you. And now the game has kind of changed. Even me, like I've been figuring out which room in my, so I'm in a completely different room now. I've created a kind of a studio in my basement. I bought some actual lights. It's a different animal for sure. And making sure you have proper lighting is a huge thing. Proper sound. If you're going to be doing interviews on a consistent basis, buy a microphone for $200. Right. Those little things just make you better than the person who was before you or the person who's after you. And your interview stands out a little bit more.
And it certainly shows. You can tell the people that devote the time and energy and being at home. We've seen so many little gaffes that happen. Cats that jump up into the interview. Something falls in the background. A kid comes running in.
Or the MP showing his junk every couple of weeks.
Well, yeah, that's a whole different way to do that. Oh, you have to watch when your camera's on and when your camera's off. But you have to wonder why. Now, another thing you did, and I found it fascinating, was during the first year of the pandemic, you went online and provided a tip a day.
Oh, my God.
One, it's a labor of love, but two, it's that's an awful lot of work to come up with 365 tips.
Yeah. So that was probably the most fortuitous marketing thing I've ever done. Again, you have this break. What am I going to do? And I realized that, like, I should be more freaked out than I am. Like, why was not really, like, I was losing all this business. You're worried, you know, sickness and your kids. And I wasn't really panicking. Like a lot of, you know, you see people hoarding toilet paper and running around with their hair on fire. And I kind of had some time to reflect, and I thought maybe in some way, the work that I've done in crisis management over the course of my career, maybe I'm kind of leaning on those muscles, and maybe that's kind of helping me keep like a cool cucumber while this is going on. And so I thought, what can I do that would help share that with other people? Like to give these little tips that we take for granted, having worked for this business for decades, how could I share that with people? And I thought maybe I'll send out like, I don't know, top 10, top 20. And I thought, well, you know what, let's try to push ourselves. And how long could this thing be? Maybe it could last a year. Who knows? And here we are almost 2 years later. And so I put out a tweet saying, I'm going to start issuing one crisis tip per day on Twitter and LinkedIn for 365 days. And I really thought about that. Like, can I even come up with, are there even 365? And I have to tell you, Steve, after about day 12, I was going to throw in the towel. I thought, oh my God, I'm running out of content here. And it just forces you to go deeper. And then you're looking at headlines and you're trying to apply something from a book that's completely on a different topic. And how does that relate? And so I didn't forget a day. That was the most surprising thing. I think one of them I sent out at 11:52. I think that was my latest one that I just got it in under the wire. But I think, you know, in terms of awareness and stats, my followers on Twitter grew like 20%. I think it got more than 250,000 views on LinkedIn. Like it was a really, really successful little thing. And now it's funny, a tweet's not that long, but 365 of them, I compile them all into a Word document. It's 12,000 words. And so I'm putting that into kind of a book format right now, and it should be ready within the next couple of months. Just this little thing, just like these little digestible bites of little tips, a lot of them in the media relations space, but it was a super fun thing to do.
It's great. You've also moved into merchandising some of these tips, and I love this only because I'm the kind of person that puts the occasional thing on a t-shirt, you know, buy a newspaper, you know, I love journalism. And all of a sudden you've got some mugs and you have some shirts.
That's ridiculous.
This was probably a bit of a, let's try it and see what happens, but there is a market for it.
It's so funny. Like I'm, the one piece of advice I'd give to people is just give it a try. You know, what's the worst that could happen? It flops. You know, you create an online course, nobody buys it. Then, okay, you've got some experience and you move along to the next thing. The upside is so much greater than the potential downside. And so with the merchandise, and here's another tip for anyone who's here. Like I found a really, like anyone who goes, like there's these t-shirts and mugs and they're very nerdy kind of communications type things. One is like, you know, I love the Oxford comma. One is I hate the Oxford comma. So I've got both sides of that audience. But the there's a site called Printful, Printful. And you can go on there. Anyone can. And you can order custom t-shirts, mugs, tote bags, notebooks, water bottles. It's not super cheap because the stuff is made on demand. So someone will go on, order a mug. It gets printed and mailed off to them. I never have to touch it. Now you're paying a bit of a premium. Like I'm actually not making any cash on those. It's basically a break even thing because the shipping and everything is rolled in, but it's fun. Right. And to me, if it gets people to find out more about the course, then that's not a bad thing. And it was so funny. Like I sent out a tweet about, I think it was the one about don't take PR advice from your lawyers. And someone said, you should put that on a t-shirt. And I thought he was kind of joking. So I actually went and I did it. And I created the shirt and I put the link on Twitter, and within 60 seconds, someone bought one. I'm like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. Like, so the e-commerce world I find fascinating. And then I got an email from Diana Bradley at PR Week saying, we'd like to do a story about this merchandise. Like, which is, none of this makes sense. This is, it's kind of like we're living in a simulation in a way.
It doesn't make sense, but it does make sense. You know, we're always looking at ways to, you know, differentiate ourselves in the crowd. And sure, it's maybe not a huge money-making venture, but you never know unless you put your feet into it. you know, my story on that is I put my logo on sweatshirts, and I had a bunch of friends who just bought them. And I gave one to my niece. Now this, you're going to love this story, but my niece is very active on TikTok. And for some reason, she's young, she's 17,
yeah,
and has 200,000 followers.
Oh my God.
So she's doing this dance wearing my sweatshirt on her TikTok video, led to two inquiries about my service. Now that's, you know,
that is bananas.
It's ridiculous.
TikTok.
But TikTok, I'm not going to be running to that, but it is sort of amazing.
But, you know, 200,000 eyeballs, that's of that group, you're going to be hitting someone, or someone sees their kid's phone. Who's that guy? Or, you know, like, it's so funny.
I'm surprised there weren't more leering old men who were following her that were looking for me, but they were legitimate calls on and business that I could quote on. So I found it fantastic. As communications people, and you were on the training side, and for much of my career, I was on sort of the direct liaison in media relations. What makes a good communications person?
What makes a good communications person? Such a broad question. There's a couple ways to look at this. You know, some of my favorite people in the world are communications people. I like the way they think. They're often very empathetic, very, very nice people. They're thoughtful. Now, obviously, just like any profession, electrician, chef, plumber, whatever, you're going to get a small percentage who are just not nice people, whatever. We all know folks from those, yeah, from those roles. To me, there's two answers to the question. What makes a great communicator, I think, is first of all, someone who knows the craft, who has a passion for it, understands how to write, how to think. Like, basic writing is just thinking on paper or on a computer. And so trying to take complex things and make them simple enough while telling the truth, like, it comes down to that decision to be ethical, the decision to do the right thing. And then how do you make that unfold from a communication standpoint? I think that to me is and that can be articulated in a bunch of different ways, and that allows for personality. But I think that to me is like making the decision, I'm going to be a just communications person. I'm going to be the person who does the right thing. Because these skills and tactics can be used in a deceptive way as well. And I think that's horrible. And we see a lot of examples of that. The other side of the question, I think, comes down to leadership. And you can have the best communications person with the best intentions and the best skill set, but if they're not trusted, and if they're not given the opportunity to do what they, to give counsel in an issue or crisis situation, if they're not let into the senior team to have those difficult discussions, then that person's not going to flower. That person's not going to add to the organization. So, you know, the skill set and all that stuff on one side, but I really believe that the quality of the leadership team on the other side, you have to have both of those together.
Yeah. I refer to some people as just simple gatekeepers, and they almost prevent the media from getting to their people. And then there are others who provide that counsel and can also be a spokesperson. I think that's so vital and important. And I know that over the years, the reporters that I built relationships with came to trust me. They knew what I could do and what I couldn't do. And I was just honest and always got back to them very quickly and tried to under-promise and over-deliver.
Yeah.
And that to me is sort of the key to being a strong spokesperson. And, you know, I continue to do that now, working with, you know, certain companies, especially here in Durham region where I live. I'm not looking to dominate the world or do anything like that, but if it's a blog, if it's a podcast, if it is just some counsel, you know, I think, you know, I owe it. And I also do a lot of mentoring with students. I find this is so great. Important. They get into this field, and I don't know if they really know the challenges, because when I started at IBC in 2011, you know, I used to say that traditional media was 85% of what I did. Social media was still in its infancy. And today that pendulum has sort of swung. And you can do as much on social media, and that may be good and that may be bad, but with a tightening media landscape, it's so hard to get in there. So when you do have the opportunity, boy, oh boy, you better maximize that opportunity, because they don't come around as often as they used to.
Oh, that's exactly right. It's the landscape has changed. Social media is such a big part of it. Pitching, I remember in the mid 90s, pitching the media was one of my least favorite things to do, because it's hard. It's difficult. No, they don't want your email. They don't want your phone call. Yeah. And they get just inundated with them. I mean, I have a sister who's a reporter at the Globe and Mail. And I said, one day I was doing a talk on pitches. I said, can you send me every pitch that you get by email? Can you just forward it to me for the morning? And within about half an hour, I said, okay, stop. Like, cause it was just, my inbox was overflowing, and they're terrible. You know, really long, like multi paragraphs, multi attachments, copying, pasting the wrong name, the wrong geography, not understanding her beat, no news, marketing, people sending her gifts in hopes that they will get media coverage. And so if that's how hard it was in the 90s, like, I can't even imagine how tough it is today. But to me, like, getting the media's attention, if you're going to get that call, and I think this is one of the things you referred to, you need to make sure that you can deliver the spokesperson on the other end, right? Yeah. And I did a session with a woman about a month ago, an executive for an association in the financial services sector. And she sort of admitted in a sort of embarrassed way that she has been getting media requests over the past year, and it's just been kind of not responding quickly enough, or, oh, it got back to, like, cause she just didn't, she was afraid to do them. Yeah. And so she left all those opportunities. And I told her, every time you turn one of those down, a puppy dies. So you need to make sure that you need to make sure that you jump on those. And so, and that's one of the reasons she did the training, to get those skills and to get that confidence.
Well, I think the big thing here is, remember, always get back to those media requests, because we can't have poor puppies going down because of it. And it's very important. Warren, I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
If people want some more information, where's the best place that they can reach you?
Oh, my website, weeksmedia.ca. And again, it's pretty boring. If you're a communications nerd, there might be some stuff there for you, but that's where everything is. And all the links to all the social media stuff are there.
Well, as always, I'm sure we'll be in touch over there. Our various forums and just back and forth. I think of you as a friend now, and we will be out for some sort of lunch or a drink when we can get back to normal at some time in the near future.
Looking forward to it. Thanks so much, Steve, and all the best, and have a great rest of the summer.
Great. Thanks. And with that, I'm bringing an end to another edition of the Next Phase with Steve Key podcast, available on all the networks. I'll put Warren's information in the descriptor. Thank you, and have a great day.